This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Welcome to the Sword and Laser, episode number 49. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And happy almost New Year.
Happy New Year to those of you who downloaded this and listened to it after the New Year.
In a timely manner.
Yes.
No, it'd be almost New Year for people who have downloaded and listened in a timely manner. And
right.
Happy New Year for
to
people
you latecomers
who are taking their dear sweet time downloading the podcast.
You're tardy but welcome.
Well, if this is the first time you have listened to our show, it is quite fortuitous because we are doing a year in review episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of got the idea for this from the forums where they started doing some threads in our Goodreads forums. First one was from Alator, which actually isn't a year in review thread. We'll get to more year in review in a minute. This is looking forward to books to be released in 2011.
Yes, and there's a lot of good ones. Primarily, I think I'm looking forward to The Heroes by Joe Abercrombie. I've been kind of talking about Joe Abercrombie nonstop for maybe the past 3 or 4 episodes.
You're kind of into Joe Abercrombie.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's kind of handsome, isn't he?
What? I never would have noticed that or based the merit of an author on...
We should interview Joe Abercrombie in person.
Okay.
We really should.
No, I know. That'd be great.
We should interview.
You're making me blush now. No, he's a great... he's a great author. And, of course, we just... you just finished... Are you done with the trilogy?
I am. I'm done with the Last Argument of Kings, so I finished the trilogy.
Well, he's got some other
books. The First Law trilogy,
I should say. The First Law trilogy. He's coming out with a new book called The Heroes, which actually includes a lot of characters that were in that trilogy.
That's what he's been doing since the First Law trilogy. He's been creating stories that exist in that universe but aren't necessarily sequels.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's going to be awesome. And I like having that tie that binds throughout a lot of stories, even if they aren't, one after another, they aren't sequential. It's nice to have that commonality of characters that you recognize. It always makes me feel more drawn into the storyline.
And you don't feel like you're pressured to have to read the next one or whatever. You're just kind of existing in the universe and you can range around. The bad thing about The Heroes coming out is that it's January 27th in the UK, but we have to wait till February 7th here in the US.
Even in Kindle?
I don't know.
Probably.
Good question. Probably, though. They usually keep those things nice and tight.
And you just finished The Name of the Wind, and the second book in that trilogy is also coming out in March.
Yes, The Wise Man's Fear by Patrick Rothfuss comes out March 1st, St. David's Day, in the UK and the US, both at the same time. I was dying to read that book as soon as I finished The Name of the Wind. You guys had all told me how good it was, and I just didn't understand how good it was till I actually started reading it, because you really feel like you're drawn in to a consistent universe that's believable. And all those little things that go through my head when I'm reading a book, like, well, I bet this is going to happen next, are either not what happens next or acknowledged as, now you might think this is what's going to happen next. Well, guess what? It does, but not for the reason you thought. And it's just, it's really well done.
Yeah. And I highly encourage that anyone who's heard us talking about this series over and over again on the show, if you need to pick up a book and want something to read over the holiday or, going into the new year, The Name of the Wind is a good one to start with.
March 22nd, new book, Songs of Ice and Fire, George R. R. Martin, reissue of A Game of Thrones.
And this one's more based off the HBO series, I guess?
I think it's probably just going to have a new cover and maybe it's edited up a little bit. Mostly, they do this all the time. Whenever a movie or a TV version of a book comes out, they'll reissue it with a cover that has a still from the TV show. And otherwise, it's pretty much the same.
And in other favorite authors of mine news, Robin Hobb is coming out with a book called The Inheritance that has cats on the cover. So, obviously.
If you're a fan of the Earth's Children series, Jean Owl's going to come out with The Land of Painted Caves. That series is not over yet. She's still plugging those out.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff coming up next year. Also, The Deserter, Embassy Town by China Mieville is coming out. It's his first sci-fi novel? I don't believe that.
Well, I guess it's the first hardcore sci-fi novel because there's been elements of science fiction in his other books for sure.
Yeah, he's been kind of alternate history, kind of steampunky mm-hmm. area. So, I'll buy that. First hardcore sci-fi.
There's another Alistair Reynolds book coming out. That gets really interesting at the end of this link of stuff that's coming out next year. Richard Morgan, who we'll talk about in our book selection as a possibility for our next book, is coming out with The Cold Commands. There's also, what was I going to point out? Oh, there's Ian Tregellis' The Coldest War, the second volume after Bitter Seeds, is expected in the fall. We don't have a date for it yet.
Oh, hey, and we've got A Dance with Dragons, George R. R. Martin, in the U.S. sometime and in the U.K. eventually.
It's supposed to come out in 2011. We don't know if it's going to come out in 2011. A lot of folks are saying that it's so long that they may actually split it for length and then release the first part in 2011. So that'd be better than nothing.
Would it?
Yeah, because we get to read something in this year.
I guess. Fine. Bitter. I'm not going to be bitter. He's not my bitch.
You're going to be all Tregellis about it.
All right. And then, of course, on Goodreads, we also have a thread about the best book of the year, 2010 edition. I like that they're going with the same naming convention as what we're reading, like October edition, November edition. Now it's 2010 edition. And so what are some of the best books of the year? Well, Hope says one of her favorites for Sword and Laser was Bitter Seeds.
That's great. I was a fan of that as well. We got Jenny, who is a consummate reader, I must say, says The Hunger Games Trilogy box set, her best series for the year, and best current fiction, Palimpsest by Catherine Valenti.
A lot of people are also saying the Millennium Trilogy, of course, starting with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Girl Who Played with Fire, and The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest by Stieg Larsson, is not really in our realm of discussion, but I read all three of them last year, and I loved those books.
I was encouraged to see people mentioning things like Dune or 1984, books that, you know, are not new in this year, but for them, they were new. This is the first time they read them. So that was cool to see people saying like, hey, I finally got around to reading this classic book and I loved it.
Yeah, Sean's got some good ones like Deep Navigation by Alistair Reynolds and Terminal World. You know, Alistair Reynolds, not someone who I've really read before, but I've been seeing so many recommendations for his works in the past couple of weeks even. I know he's been around for a while, but it's just cool to see everyone bringing him up over and over again. And hey, maybe we'll end up reading him this next cycle.
Yeah, we have a book by him nominated for the vote. So we'll get to that at the end of the show. Let's continue our year in review by looking back on the books we read here on Sword and Laser this year and just our quick thoughts on them. And then I'm going to pick my favorite. You can pick your favorite if you want, V. So we started off the year. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago. We read Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom by Cory Doctorow.
I know. And I was just thinking about this recently because there was this big New York Times article about how Disney World has this huge underground nerve center now.
Yes.
Trying to figure out the length of lines and minimizing that impact on vacationers. And I was like, wow, okay. It's really turning into that future Disney World that Cory wrote about.
That's what Cory's so brilliant about. And he did it in this just as well, or if not the best that he's ever done it, is he finds these things that he knows are already true, but they're very early on. They haven't really spread. And then he takes them to that logical next step, and it makes it seem like his future is so weird and way out there, but then it has a good chance of being imitated by real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I thought that was a really interesting book, and his writing is always fascinating, and I'm glad we read it.
The Wind Up Girl by Paolo Bacigalupi was our next book, as recommended by Cory Doctorow. He actually picked, we had him on for an interview, and he picked The Wind Up Girl. I was really glad he did. We had some mixed reviews on it, though.
Yeah, it was an interesting book, wasn't it? I'm still not sure how much I loved it. It wasn't one of those books that I couldn't put down, but I'm glad I read it overall. And I still have some rambutan that a listener
sent.
Oh,
yes. I have my can as well. Maybe I should bring it over for New Year's Eve. We can have some rambutan for New Year's
Eve.
Yes,
we'll make rambutan cocktails.
Yes.
Excellent. No, we really will. That's a great idea.
That is a good idea.
Actually put them in like lychee fruits.
I love that. Yeah. All right. Yeah. There we go.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Idea.
But you know what? I have to say, I didn't like it as much at the time as I do now. It's one of those books that over time, little bits of it have come back to me more and more. And I really have a much fonder feeling for it than I did right after I finished reading it. It's a slow burn. It's a slow sink in.
Well, apparently lots of other people agreed because it did win the Hugo Award.
Yes.
For best new novel.
It might be good.
It might be all right.
I don't know. It won a Hugo Award.
Yeah.
Whatever. What do they know? Bitter Seeds by Ian Tregellis was next. It seems to me like that was a lot longer ago that we read that.
I know. Well, I loved Bitter Seeds. That was one of my favorite reads of the year.
Yeah, it was absolutely one of my favorite concepts. Every time I tell someone about it, you know, just the line like, well, it's World War II, but told where the UK has warlocks and Germany is developing superheroes. People are like, what is that again? Let me write that down. I have to read that. And it's not exactly what you think going into it, but it's still what he does with it that's different is amazing. I can't wait for the next version or the next book in that series. World War Z, An Oral History of the Zombie War by Max Brooks was next. This was the first one of the year for me that I had already read, so I read it in audiobook form.
Ah, and it had a lot of great people reading that too. I remember Henry Rollins and who else was reading
it? Alan Alda was in it.
Nice.
Rob Reiner was in it. It was great.
And Max Brooks, of course, a from a famous family. Mel Brooks is his father.
Right. And I think probably for me, the definitive work of zombie fiction so far.
And a lot more intense than one would expect. I mean, there were some really kind of moments in that book that kind of stuck with me over the next year, just being like, oh, man, that scene was pretty brutal.
Yeah. Absolutely. We moved on from there to The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. We're sort of forming this idea of coming back and forth between the sword and the laser. And this was a chance to do some classic sci-fi.
Yeah, I liked it. It was okay. It wasn't my favorite.
I really liked it. And it's almost the opposite of Bacigalupi. I don't like it more as time goes by. I wouldn't even go so far as say I like it less, but it's sort of like I really enjoyed it while I was reading it, and it hasn't stayed with me. And I think that's less a criticism of Heinlein and more just, you know, the difficulty of reading an older book and having it be as relevant. It's a sign of brilliance when a book can stay with you when it's that old. This one didn't quite succeed. Others of Heinlein's have, so it's not a Heinlein problem. It's maybe just this book.
I loved the character of Manny. He was a great character, I thought, and a lot of the aspects of the story I found very interesting and still relevant today. But I didn't like the politics of it. I think when we come across things like memoirs and when we read something like The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, sometimes I don't really know how to explain it. It's just boring to me to read. I'm sorry.
It's a little dry.
Maybe I'm more into the action and the romance of some of the books. But when you get into the kind of philosophical and governmental, almost like drudgery of some of these books and explaining the politics going on, for some reason, that's never really been that interesting to me.
Now, I had a bigger political problem with T.H. White's The Once and Future King because he hated the Irish and women.
This was pretty fun because we've done Sword in the Stone, I can't think of anything right now. I was trying to cram in too much information into my brain.
The Mist of Avalon.
Thank you. Yes, we read Mist of Avalon and other Arthurian legends in the past. So to go to this version of that story, I think it was maybe a little too soon after we read Mist of Avalon, which was like 2 years ago.
Still too soon.
Too soon.
That's funny. Too soon. We also, at the same time, are reading The Princess Bride by William Goldman.
Yeah, and that was a fun read, too, especially because I really grew up with The Princess Bride, and that was one of my favorite movies growing up. And to be able to finally read it in book form and see the, you know, William Goldman's point of view, I guess, in those parts of the book was pretty cool. And I loved reading the lines that I loved hearing the actors say so many
Although
times.
It did just make me want to watch the movie. I immediately watched the movie as soon as I was done reading the book.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That's cute.
And then we finished the year with How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe by Charles Yu, and we will wrap that up in a moment.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
I am diving into The Dark Tower on audiobook. I just bought it and just downloaded it. In fact, I'm going to start listening to it as soon as this podcast is over and I jump in the car and head out to dinner. And so I'm very excited about it. I'm going to read The Sword and Laser Pick as my textbook, you know, as my digital. In fact, I'm probably, depending on what we pick, I'll probably just read it digitally, so I won't have a text version in reality. But I recommend The Dark Tower. It is based on Arthurian legend.
Oh.
Very loosely, though.
You're obsessed.
Very loosely. I didn't even know that until I started reading one of the reviews.
You need a new hobby.
I was like, oh, crap. But it's also the source material for a lot of other homages, a lot of other things in Stephen King's universe, and Lost, the television series. Actually drew on The Dark Tower for a lot of inspiration.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
There's a man in black.
Of
in
course
the
there is.
Yeah.
You know, I read The Dark Tower when I was in fifth grade.
Yeah.
Is that too early?
Maybe. Maybe a little early, Miss Precocious.
I remember being very scared.
I bet you would get a whole different take on it if you read it today.
Yeah. Maybe I'll give it another shot. I'm still reading or listening to the Tiffany Aching series by Terry Pratchett.
Ah, very good.
Enjoying that very much.
I was torn between doing a Terry Pratchett book for my next audiobook. So
I recommend it. Tiffany Aching series, The We Free Men.
Well, we may have a Terry Pratchett book in our next pick, so we'll see.
Good point. All right, so How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe, a novel by Charles Yu, who is also the author of the book and also the main character.
Yeah, it is one of those self-referential, the book you're reading is the book that he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets even more self-referential later on in the book. Spoiler alert, pause.
Yeah.
He kills himself. In the future, a future self comes out and he kills his future self. Then he jumps in the time machine and there's a book that he's been given called How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe. And he has to write it out while he's reading it. And so the book actually creates itself because he just makes a copy and that's how the book exists. And so it's one of those time travel paradox sorts of things. And then you realize the book you're reading is the book that created itself and it gets even trippier.
Well, I actually highlighted a section of that book describing that scenario. Do you mind if I read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
If I mess up words, forgive me. Perhaps even more disturbing than the fact that there are missing and damaged words and sentences in the text is that there are places where the book, this book, is simply blank, even though I am pretty sure this makes no sense, since how can I know there will be blanks when I have not, by my own admission, read ahead to see any blanks yet, and there haven't been any so far. I'm still performing the read-write self-edit process as faithfully as I can. In fact, even this parenthetical aside has been worded exactly as I am recording it, right up to the words I'm typing right now and now and now and now. Now, I am typing what appears to be somewhat digressive and extraneous rambling, all of which is starting to make me have very serious doubts in terms of the whole free will versus determinism situation. Because even as I am typing from the copy I have in my hand, the text is matching my thoughts exactly, all the way down to Eureka, that word, that random word that I just interjected there, or attempted to interject. That word, Eureka, having occurred in the text at the precise moment I had decided internally to inject a random word in an attempt to diverge from the text, and now, having failed in that attempt, realizing I had better stop now and end the sentence before I dig myself any deeper into metaphysical trouble.
And this all relates to the principle that he links in the digital version to a YouTube video explaining the psychological principle that they've done studies that show where our decision points happen in the brain activity before we're actually aware that we've made a decision.
Mm-hmm. And he also describes deja vu several times in the book in a very interesting way. And maybe I'm thinking of a different book.
No, he describes deja vu as, you know, a sort of that idea of having the sort of where he's got the book that knows what he's going to write next. He's mm-hmm. like, yeah, that's like deja vu.
Okay.
Where we know what's going to happen already. We've already seen it, sort of.
Because I started reading another book immediately after finishing this book. And so now I'm having trouble sorting them out in my brain.
Yes.
So overall, opinions on the book. How did you feel about it?
I thought it reminded me a lot of Stanislav Lem, which I mentioned on the last episode. Also, after talking with Jenny in the Goodreads forum, I think it reminds me a lot of Italo Calvino, especially if on A Winter's Night, a Traveler. It's that kind of not really postmodern, but sort of introspective, self-referential, thought experiment kind of book that's really playing around with ideas and is very clever. But as a story, is not that satisfying to me. And that mm-hmm. isn't necessarily a bad thing. It is what it is. It's sort of the way I feel about Tron Legacy, the movie. It was a great visual experience, if not a good story. So if you're, and most people are like, well, what do I want from a book unless it's a story? But I think you can get something from this. I think you can get a lot from this. It's very thought-provoking, and it's very interesting the way it plays with psychology and the meanings of mm-hmm. time and the meaning of language. But it's a very linguistic approach rather than a narrative approach.
Yes.
And that isn't for everybody.
I loved the concepts, and I loved this description of time travel. There's another quote in the book. You can't build a car that violates the laws of physics. Same goes for a time machine. You can't just go anywhere, only to places it will let you go. You can only go to places that you will let yourself go. So that whole idea of a time machine that can only really travel to places that you have been or will be able to go to, that I found really interesting. What I didn't love was the daddy issues in the book.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a book about daddy issues. That's what the book's about. And that gets bandied about as an insult, like, ooh, that guy's got daddy issues or mommy issues or whatever.
It was more the way he handled it.
I think I get what you mean, which is like the daddy issues, while they're wrapped in this very clever, very insightful linguistic wrapper, the issues themselves don't seem to be resolved. And maybe that's his point. Maybe he's saying, you know what? We just have to accept what we get.
Yeah, there was a bit in the ending that kind of made me feel like maybe it had been wrapped up in the end. But at the same time, I didn't feel that satisfaction of, you know, oh, did he find his father? Oh, did he make peace with the whole situation? You know, is he going to be a different person than who he intended to be? And I don't know.
Yeah. And in life, you don't. And maybe that's his point. But again, it goes back to my thing. If you're looking for a story with an ending, this it's not that kind of book.
Yeah. Agreed. Would you recommend it to someone?
I would recommend it to people after asking them a few questions about what kind of books they like. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it is on the whole a great book. I think it's really, really well written, and I enjoyed it.
In
fact, I found it fast to read.
Like Ed.
I know. I was reading it one night. Actually, when I finished it, I was like sitting by the fireplace in the evening, and Django, my dog, is laying down on the ground. And there's those parts about Ed near the end where I was like, "Aw, that's you."
And I liked Tammy. I liked
that Tammy was a great invention.
Yeah, I thought she was great, and I liked Phil. I liked the peripheral characters a whole lot.
Well, that's
it.
He was very clever with his concepts, and that definitely keeps you interested in it and keeps the story moving along.
Like the idea of a computer program that thinks it's a real person and thinks it goes home and has dinner with its wife and kids every night and thinks that you're going to go out and have a beer with it after work and
it
talks in like a very conversational manner to you but has no idea that it's actually a program. And then the idea that you can basically break it to them
yeah
that they are a computer and they can never go back and be that personality that they were before.
And you feel bad. You've damaged him. It's not the first time somebody's written about a self or a computer program that thought it was a real person, mm-hmm. but it was so differently done.
Well, it's different from being self-aware, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's actually not self-aware.
It's the opposite
of self-aware.
It's
a person. Yeah. Right.
Anyway, okay, well, I would recommend it in kind of the same context you would. Someone who's very interested in time travel and the ideas behind time travel, but wants it in still a science fictional terms.
Or even anybody who's into linguistics and postmodern theory. And if you like Umberto Eco, if you like Italo Calvino, if you like Lem, I think you're going to like this book.
All right. And so other things that we have finished or are currently reading, you just, yep. as we mentioned, wrapped up The Name of the Wind.
I did. I pretty much said as many glowing things about it as possible. But what a fantastic idea for a narrative. Kind of the opposite of How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe. I don't know. Maybe that's the reason I was so involved in it, because I was reading them both at the same time. But it's a true story. And it's rich, and the world seems real, and the people seem real, and their motivations seem real without seeming modern. They seem like they're from this other land and this other time.
Totally.
It's just really, Patrick Rothfuss outdid himself in creating this world, but then not only created a great world, but also figured out how to execute two strands of stories, a contemporary, what am I trying to say?
Contemporary in the storyline.
It's like a present tense story, and then I'm telling a past story that are both just, you get lost in them. So anyway, can't wait for the next one.
What just occurred to me, though, is that, you know, it is a retelling from someone's own personal point of view, so you don't get that God view, and you don't get that third person view. It's that, you know, first person retelling of his own story.
Although
to a third party.
He's in the inn, so you get another perspective on him, but never another perspective on his own story. That's
exactly
interesting. Yeah.
Right. So we'll see how that all comes together. You know, mm-hmm. probably not until 2012 or 2013 when the third book comes out. You know, as far as we know, it'll come out. He's working on the second one now.
And by 2013, you will have finished the series that you just
Yes, I have just started Neal Stephenson's The Baroque Cycle.
How far in are you?
I am at... Hold on. I will tell you exactly how far in I am, but I will tell you that when I started reading it, I was at 1% for a really long time.
It's a long... You're just reading volume one, right?
I'm on Quicksilver, volume one of The Baroque Cycle. I am 12% in.
They're all... extraordinarily long books. So 12% in of Quicksilver is a pretty good chunk. What are you thinking of it so far?
I like it.
What do you like about it?
What do I like about it? I like that it's real characters, real people from history, which is one of the reasons you thought
mixed,
that I
mixed
would enjoy
in
it.
Went with some Stevenson folks. Yeah.
I like the. I don't really know how to explain what I like yet, because it's just starting. I like
because
how the characters
not,
talk.
Yeah, well, he tried to make them talk more like they would talk back then, but still be accessible mm-hmm. to a modern audience.
I like seeing this other side of popular characters from history, you know, kind of getting inside their brains, even if that's not really what happened inside their brains.
But a speculation, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The speculation on their personalities and how they acted in a day-to-day kind of scenario is pretty cool. And the explanations they have behind, like, scientific things that they haven't yet discovered how they actually work yet, like how they're looking at it in that time frame is really interesting. And one of my favorite things was just, I love that it's the Massachusetts Bay Colony Institute of Technological Arts.
Yes. Well, that's true because you're from that area. So some of that stuff is gonna strike home a little harder for you than it might for someone else.
No, yeah. Having spent so much time in Boston and, you know, knowing people who went to
Boston.
MIT and they're talking about Harvard College and college and just stuff like that. I get a kick out of that.
Well, and I think what you're going to like, what some people don't like because they liked Stevenson's Snow Crash, mm-hmm. Is that it's history. It's not tech. It's not full of tech. There's tech in it, but it's old tech and it's the roots of tech. And so it's not this like flashy cyberpunk novel. It's total departure from that. But he really does a good job of capturing a sense of that time. I don't know how accurate it is, but it feels genuine. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I wouldn't use it as a basis for creating a theory about history, but it definitely lends some insight into how things might have worked. It's not a romantic telling. There's going to be a coffee shop scene. I can't even remember which book it's in, but it's in a book after coffee is discovered, and people, it's become this new popular thing that people are going to do. And it's both totally familiar in some of the ways it's a coffee shop that seem like, okay, yeah, it could have happened that way in the 1600s, and totally unfamiliar in the way some of the interactions happen and the reactions people have to a knife being drawn and all this stuff. You're like, that would never happen today. And so it's like that throughout.
You know what really creeped me out was the scene, not to give any spoilers, but they do go through the, you know, the bubonic plague, and he's walking through someone's, through like a basement area, and he sees all these dead rats, and then he's, the fleas are like bouncing off his boots.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't, I don't think they knew at that point that it was the fleas that were passing it along.
They thought it was bad air.
Yeah, and he had like the scarf around his head, and he was trying not to breathe in infected areas, and I was like, the fleas!
Oh no, it's so brilliant. I'm actually, it's one of those things that I'm sort of jealous that you're getting to read it for the first time. Because if I know a lot of people have tried to struggle through it and not made it, but I enjoyed it so much. And it sounds like you're going to enjoy it too.
I hope so. So we have to talk about our next book, our first book of 2011.
That's right. We have four choices that we've gleaned from that thread we talked about last week where people were throwing up ideas. Many people suggested Altered Carbon by Richard Morgan. It is a graphic book. It's not terribly, I'd say it's R-rated, not X-rated.
Really?
But yeah, it's got some intense sexual scenes and some intense violence scenes in it. So
it's American Gods all over again.
It may not be for it is kind of American Gods all over again. It may not be for everyone, but it is a great story. I've read it about the idea of being able to just be re-sleeved in a new body anytime you want, and it's not like in Cory Doctorow's book, done for recreation or just as a natural part of things. It's, you know, some people can afford it, some people can't. How do you, you know, ensure your backups? It's a crime book. It's basically a mystery novel. It's a noir take on that.
Very cool. And then we have A Fire Upon the Deep by Werner Vinge?
I think it's Vinge. Yeah, it's. I don't know as much about Vinge's stuff. I'm familiar with him. But basically the idea is thousands of years from now, there's a ton of races inhabiting the universe, and your mind's potential is determined by how far away you are from super intelligent entities in the, quote, transcend to the limited minds of the unthinking depth. So where you are between those is basically how much potential your mind has. It sounds like pretty high concept, but people were saying, hey, we want some hardcore sci-fi. So I think this is another good nomination.
Yeah, another book that he wrote, Rainbow's End, was on a lot of best of lists last year. I don't think it came out last year. It came out in 2007. First published in 2006, actually. But that one's supposed to be a good one as well. But for now, it's going to be A Fire Upon the Deep in our choices.
Yep. Absolutely. Then also Good Omens, probably the lightest book that we're putting up for a vote. It's a combination of Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
I would like to read this one. I've wanted to read this one for a while. So maybe if we don't pick it, I might just add it to my list anyway.
It's morbid humor, involves the apocalypse. Apparently there's a mix up when the Antichrist was born, due in part to the machinations of Crowley. So, you know, it's that kind of book. Sounds amazingly humorous, but maybe not for everyone. So we also have another hardcore book, Revelation Space by Alistair Reynolds.
Yes, and this is book one of a series. So just be aware of that going into it. If you want to get involved, sucked into another series, this is book one. And it has to do with human colonists settling a new home world, and they're trying to figure out why the creatures there, the aliens there before them, did not make it.
They died out right before they figured out space travel, apparently, the Amarantans. So, you know, it has a deep 900,000-year-old historical mystery to solve right off the bat. Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me, too. And then we, as we mentioned, read The Once and Future King a while back, and Tom and I both bought the book and then ended up reading it as audiobooks, I believe.
That's right.
So we have copies to give away, and did we pick some winners?
Yes. Thanks to everybody who is patiently posting since November 23rd and waiting for us to pick. We wanted to give people lots of time, although people really didn't post again after December 13th. But here we go. I'm going to thank Leekshua, I think, who said, I don't have an elaborate story, but I've never read any Arthurian legend, only watched movies. After listening to the podcast, it appears a greater appreciation of Arthurian legend is absorbed through reading than visual adaptations, so I thought I would give it a try. And then our other winner is Eric. I would like to have a copy. It's been some time since I've read an actual Dead Tree edition of a book.
Well, I have to honestly say that I need to locate my copy of the book because I moved and it's somewhere in the house and I need
to find
it. But if I don't find it, I'll buy you a copy, okay?
I know where mine is.
I will buy them a copy, I promise. So, hey, you two guys or girls, send us in send us an email at theswordandlaser@gmail.com. Let us know where you would like us to send it.
Yeah, or since you're on Goodreads, you could just message us through Goodreads. That way we know it's coming from the right account.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, that's all we got. It was a good year in Sword and Laser Land.
It was. We moved to Squarespace and got a funky looking cool new site. We moved to Goodreads and got a funky looking cool new group. I really feel good about the way things are going, especially at Goodreads, man, has just taken off. I love the conversations going on in there. Thank you for browbeating me into participating more because I'm having a good time.
I know. You took a little cajoling, but I think you're getting into it now.
It was just, I was changing jobs and moving and all this stuff.
Excuses.
I haven't seen you in the forums lately.
Really?
Oh, you've been moving.
Oh, I've been moving and the holidays and traveling and stuff. I'll be there. All right, guys. If you want to get in touch with us, as I said, the email address is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. The website, as always, is swordandlaser.com. And follow all our conversations at goodreads.com. Search for Sword and Laser. We will see you next year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.